RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
BioGrow is New Zealand's largest and best known certifier for organic produce and products, certifying and accrediting over 900 producers, farmers, and manufacturers around New Zealand. Since October 2016, BioGrow has been owned by the Soil and Health Association. The Soil and Health Association is the largest membership organization supporting organic food and farming in New Zealand and one of the oldest organic organizations in the world, established in 1941. BioGrow certification means New Zealand producers can access international markets and tap into the growing consumer demand for organic produce, assisting producers to meet international organic regulations in key export markets, including Europe, Canada, the US, and parts of Asia. And I want to welcome onto our program Donald Nordeng, who is the Chief Executive of BioGrow. Donald, thanks for coming on RCR. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to have this opportunity to speak to your listeners.
We want to discuss the impact of GE deregulation on our organic growers. I guess, first question, really, your thoughts about the current government's plans and timeline for biotech deregulation, including GE and GMO.
Yeah, it's a pretty aggressive timeline. I think it's maybe a little bit too aggressive. However, every government has their own point of view at what they want to do with technology. And this gene technology is something that I think they wanted to push in their campaign promises. From an organic point of view, it doesn't give us much time to respond, but we're responding through the channels that we do have.
These plans, are they ultimately a threat?
I think it's a threat to not only organic products and producers, but also a threat to the New Zealand kind of green, clean and green image of our products overseas.
Describe that image. I mean, many of us just go about our daily lives. We don't really know what's happening in that space, that sector. Can you describe the image that we have?
Well, I think if you go around the world and you talk to the consumers that buy our products, so you know, New Zealand is exporting to just about every major market around the world, if not every major market around the world. Our beef, our lamb, our milk products, our fresh fruit and wine, our honey, our seafood, all of these fantastic products that we've got, not to say nothing of our wool, of course. And you know, you've got European markets that are very strict on, and getting stricter as we speak, on genetically modified organisms, but not only genetically modified organisms, but the use of gene technology, particularly in organic. And there's a huge market, of course, for non-GMO products. So that's one. The Japanese market is another. That's a long-standing market for the products that we just mentioned. And of course, the U.S. is kind of a mixed bag because you've got a lot of gene technology there, but you've also got a huge market segment for organic and non-GMO foods.
Right. And how premium is our brand?
Well, the New Zealand brand is obviously very premium because you've got the most beautiful country in the world, right? I mean, okay, Anybody that's seen any movie or any promotional materials about our country is, you know, obviously fantastic. I think it was voted one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful country in the world.
Okay. All right. So I want to go through some of the risks that certified organic farming faces when genetically engineered crops are introduced. Top of my list is cross-contamination. You want to speak about that?
Yes, I do. I mean, we've got the risk now with pesticide use already. So with gene technology, obviously, it's different because it modifies the plants that you're growing, right? So if your neighbor decides to, on their property, grow this genetically modified seed and it contaminates my property, then I kind of lose my property rights over the crops that I'm growing. So if my pasture is, you know, non-GMO or traditionally grown seed or organic, then all of a sudden I lose my organic premium, I lose my non-GMO premium, And also, if I'm not doing any of those, I'm just farming the way I've always done, all of a sudden I'm beholden to the seed owner, and I have to pay them some kind of licensing fee for nothing that I wanted to do on my own. So any one of those situations, whether you're an organic farmer or a non-organic farmer, you kind of lose rights over your own land, which is not exactly what we... So if we're going to introduce these technologies, we also have to have protection for people who want to live their own life, right?
I can't see how that can be fair. You know, you don't want this stuff. They make a product that can cross-contaminate, and next thing you know, you've got the liability.
I think this is really why the timeline is a factor, because there isn't enough time to put in some regulatory controls around how you can protect your own rights. If we only go through intellectual property rights, then that supersedes land owner rights.
I'm thinking, what if you've got dairy, beef, lamb, whatever, chewing on ryegrass that is modified with cross-contamination? That could be possible. Where does that leave the product of the animal?
So if the field that I am putting my, or the paddock that I'm putting my beef cattle out there, and I am going to then sell those animals as organic, if the pasture becomes genetically modified, then the animals lose that status. They lose that status.
Yeah.
So then I lose that premium, and I lose the time that I've invested in making that pasture organic.
What could be the impact to market value then of organic, certified organic products for export? I suppose we're talking here. I'm sensing that there would be a significant devaluation.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you lose the market premium that we're talking about. So currently, the organic exports are valued at about $450 million. The global market for organic is about $230 billion. So the market size is quite large, but still we've got a lot of room to grow into that.
Our authorities, our government, they must be aware of these downsides, right? They must know about these issues.
Yeah, I think it's I think part of the issue is that we're one of the only countries in the world, if not the only country in the world, that has the unique situation where we can actually keep out this gene technology used for modifying plant chromosomes.
Oh, so we're the last standing, are we?
I think we're probably as close as you can get. Some of the Pacific Islands might be able to do it. But, you know, because we're where we are, we have that ability. So to take that away seems to be, I don't want to say short-sighted, but close to that.
There seems to be a real push for anything that can make, well, a fast buck is what I'm thinking, you know, and the answer is a sort of like a technocratic answer. Any ideas on why there is so much enthusiasm there for, you know, modifying nature, really, is what I'm thinking?
Yeah, I think it's one of the things where you've got this new technology that's a quote unquote precision gene editing, which is, people use the term CRISPR, the CRISPR technology, where you can modify a gene. It isn't actually as precision as they say. It is more precision than it used to be, but it's not as precise as what they actually claim. When you really get into the science, I'm not a scientist. I've only heard scientists tell me what's going on. But I think there's a lot of money, obviously, behind that. So a lot of it's driven by investment, and the size of the investments are not small.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is that the term biotechnology or biotech is biological technology. It's about changing the genome, or it's about modifying the organism. And what the organic principles tell us is that there's another way around that one, which is taking gene technology, analyzing the genome of existing organisms, or analyzing the genome of existing colonies. Or, for example, what we're talking about really is the species that exist in the soil. We still don't even know what they do. We don't even know what a lot of them are. So we can know that there's genetic material there, but we don't know what those organisms do. So our point of view is do a little bit more research, find out how to maximize those organisms that are going to support your ryegrass, and use those to improve the health of your soil, rather than go for this kind of tool in a toolbox metaphor, where you're going to take one species and, you know, basically put steroids in it and make it stronger.
In a very blunt exercise, right?
Yes.
Low resolution.
That's right.
Yeah. And probably the more you look, the more you find.
The more you look, the more you find.
Yeah. Okay. We've learned from Claire Bleakley from GE3NZ, has been on this program a few times, that she told us that GE crops often require specific herbicides and pesticides, and they can drift, right? So definitely, that ups the ante on pesticides, herbicides, and another danger for any certified organic grower right there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, pesticide drift is an issue now. Organic growers have to put in buffer zones, or use the way the crop is laid out to avoid pesticide drift. And of course, talking to neighbors is a big part of that, making sure that they spray when the wind is down, if that's possible. And then also just responsible use of the herbicide or the pesticide. Oh, what is it?
Well, the other thing we've learned is the regenerative farming techniques eliminate the need, actually, in many cases, for the use of such chemicals. It would be smarter to go that way, wouldn't it?
Definitely. I mean, organic is regenerative farming, and regenerative is just taking that and focusing more on the soil health aspects of it, rather than just kind of a regulated approach to it. So they're both organic and regenerative, or similar systems, except that regenerative doesn't go for a certification or a certification scheme. And I definitely think that the approach is very attractive for many, many farmers, because it's an easy in. They can start using some of the techniques that organic farmers have pioneered, but they don't need the onerous, you know, people like me working at an organic certifier coming in and asking them to take a whole bunch of records and then have that reviewed every year.
Okay, well, that's interesting. What is involved in certification? I mean, how much of a deep dive do you have to do to sign it off?
Well, certification is really just about approving what, or not approving really, because we're not approving anything. We're just, you know, the person who's running the farm, they have a farming system, and we're just checking to meet it, to see if it meets the standards. And so in order to do that, we require a lot of different kinds of records, like what did you purchase? So what kind of inputs are you purchasing? You know, what kind of fertilizers are you using? When did you use them? How many animals? Your stocking rates? Where are they? How are they kept? What kind of animal treatments are you using? Things like that. So most farmers are already doing most of that anyway, right? A lot of those things are required under, you know, Health and Safety Act, or Food Act, or Animal Products Act, or Wine Act. So there's a lot of the records already there. It's basically just taking that, put another layer over that about this this approach to soil health and animal health.
When it comes to biodiversity and the widespread adoption, let's say, of GE crops, what does that potentially due to biodiversity. Does it have an impact potentially?
Yes. So what we've seen is that, obviously, as you mentioned, most of the genetically modified organisms that are out there are designed to be used with Roundup. So Roundup Ready soybeans is the biggest. And then you've got other crops that are designed to be used with different pesticides or different herbicides. And so obviously the thing that, well, maybe not obviously, but the thing that often happens is once you introduce that crop into a field, you're kind of stuck using that crop in that field because you can't grow anything else there because those weeds become immune, so to speak, okay, to glyphosate or whatever. So what we've got happening in countries where they have introduced, say, Roundup Ready is one, but that's not the only one, is you get kind of super weeds that are...
super weeds.
They don't react to... they call them super weeds. And then they don't react. So I suppose gorse would be a super weed.
Yeah, boy, isn't it? Is it what? Yeah, okay. And I'm just also wondering if organic farmers are in for additional costs because the more GE modification around, let's say that's the case, the more testing and more rigorous the certification process has to be, and that can only mean it costs more, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't have to test for GMOs right now because there aren't any. There aren't even being grown here. There are GMOs in the food chain. Food products coming from overseas may have them inside them, and also animal feeds a lot of times will be a GMO. But we don't have to do testing for crops or for orchards or things like that right now. But afterwards, we would do, and those tests aren't like pesticide residue tests. They're quite a bit more. And also, a genetic modified organism will show up as a kind of in a PCR test as positive or negative. I mean, we've all had experiences with PCR tests, perhaps.
Yeah. We know how they work. We had a PCR test expert on, and he told us how the whole thing works. And I think it was designed for this sort of work rather than diagnostic purposes, where you could it was designed for that. All right. It sounds like we're at some kind of fork in the road. Is that how you would characterize it?
Yeah, I think, once you open up that box, the genie is out. I really think that it's one thing to enable the use of the technology and regulation for, some kind of catastrophic event where maybe that's the last thing you've got left to do. I think that might be kind of a first step, and then that gives us more time to really think about which species to introduce. But I think the introduction of just a blanket, you can use anything, which is essentially what they're saying. They want to limit the definition of genetic technology or gene modification to allow CRISPR to be used just without any kind of labeling or control. And I think that's not really where we want to go.
So a lot of faith has been put in this CRISPR technique or technology, has it?
It's interesting that you would use the word faith.
Well, I did, in a very decided way, because it sounds like a kind of leap of faith without knowing too much more than that.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, isn't it, with science? A lot of it's faith-based.
Yeah. Scientism, I think they call it. It's kind of a religion. Okay. The other thing, too, is that I've really been on a journey of understanding, and this has never really paid any attention to it. And I have a feeling that many New Zealanders are in that position. They hear the sort of cheerleaders for GE modification and, got to keep up with technology, and we're going to keep up with the world and stay ahead of the game as a food producer, but not hearing any more detail or the other side of the story. How optimistic are you, or pessimistic, whatever the case may be, and we're talking about that fork in the road, that someone will come to their senses. I'm just trying to be kind with the language here and realize, because it kind of feels like common sense that for a small country like us, with the reputation and branding image that we have, that it sounds wiser to go with the organic premium products than just be with everyone else in the world scrambling around, sort of bottom feeding with mass production through GE modified technology.
Yeah, like that gets into being really what people want, and I almost think that this is a referendum topic more than a government decision.
That's a very good point you've just made. Yeah, because it's so consequential, isn't it?
Yes. It's a fundamental change in our approach to the technology. And it's almost like the nuclear moment when we said, well, we're not having that.
Yeah. But people have to know that it's even an issue. And yeah. I don't think we're even at that point yet, really.
Yeah, education, I guess, is the word that put out there. But I kind of think that people have thought somewhat about it. And I think it's just been obfuscated a little bit. And really, it's how do we want to approach agriculture and how do we want to approach food production? And I think the approach that we've had to date it aligns with a lot of our values. You know, we're a nation of doers, and what we've been doing is producing some of the world's best food. I don't think we need anyone else's technology to bring it in here to do that. I think we've been doing just fine on our own. And modifying, you know, ryegrass is from somewhere else anywhere. So taking that and then further modifying it on this dream that you're going to somehow get more oil out of the nut of that, you know, that half acre block, you're just dreaming. I mean, you can only squeeze so much oil out of that nut before it cracks, right? I mean, there's only so much production that you can get out of a hectare of land, period. There's going to be some point where it's just not going to go any further. And so there's this kind of utopian dream that there's a technology out there, I'm going to be able to get more milk solids out of this acre than I can now. And I don't really think that that's the place that we want to go to, where we're then not thinking about, we're thinking about that as a commodity. We're not thinking about the wholeness of it. You know, there's more to it than just the commodity value of it. There's the food value. So how good is that food if you're just squeezing? It's like, you know, extra virgin olive oil, right? Extra virgin olive oil is this first press. After that, it's the second press and the third press. So we're talking about the third press here.
Yeah. Why go for that when you can go for the first press?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting talking with you, Donald. Donald Nording, Chief Executive of BioGrow. Thanks for coming on, Donald.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.